Wearing only trousers and an undershirt, Clive went outside into the early Wolvercourt morning. Bollocks, he complained in disbelief. The crash had long echoed out and left behind a single car, a small blue Peugeot, rolled on its side near a copse of trees, and the sound of a woman crying. Clive increased his gait, putting a slippered foot onto the drive shaft and hoisted himself up and looked into the cab. "Jenny?" he asked the woman, wriggling herself out of the passenger seat. Below her was the dead body of Mayor McCheese. Clive grabbed Jenny's arm through the window. She stepped obliviously onto Mayor McCheese's face, her pump heel crushing his soft yellow bun skull and those layered hamburger patties he formed his mouth with. Clive helped Jenny onto the ground and then looked back at the mess of Mayor McCheese's face. "Bloody hell," he hissed. Flighting in the puddle of condiments and bun crumbs was a half-empty bottle of vodka. Clive lowered himself in and, legs braced against the sides, reached down to pluck out the ketchup and mustard-covered bottle with a sucking sound. He went to where Jenny was on the ground. "Okay, old girl," he said, "let's go." He hurried her back to the cottage and led her in and upstairs to the bedroom. As Clive laid her onto the bed, he looked down and noticed shoe-shaped smears of condiments on the carpet. "I'm sorry," Jenny slurred. "We thought you were gone to London. You always were." He remembered a bottle in his hand and went downstairs to find a bin liner in which to stow it away. There was a knock upon the door. Clive dropped the bottle to the ground where it broke. Kicking the glass aside, he washed his hands quickly while the knocking continued. Clive answered the door. "Sorry to disturb you, Professor," a constable offered with a tip of his hat. "There's been an accident." "I was sleeping until you knocked." "Your lights were on, that's all." "Are they hurt?" "Dead, just one fellow there is. A Yank, as far as we can tell. How can you tell? He got a hamburger patty for a noggin, he does. Havin' a late-night snack, Professor?" "No, why do you ask?" "Spot of mustard on your trousers. Right there." Clive walked into the kitchen and set his lecture notes and papers down on the table. Candace was washing up dishes. He snuck up and embraced her. "Never mind you," she lightly scolded. "I'm trying to wash up last night's supper plates that you forgot about." "I invited some grad students over for lunch tomorrow, and Mayor McCheese. You know that bloke visiting from the States? The one who's promoting those new restaurants here?" Candace stared back at Clive. "All right. A cold lunch then, love. And don't worry about Mayor McCheese. I've already spoke with him regarding those blue jokes. Is Jenny coming?" "Yes, with Peter." "She's lovely, isn't she? Reminds me of Deborah Kerr. She's bringing Peter down, if you ask me." The next day, Jenny and Peter arrived. Mayor McCheese was late. Candace set food out and left the trio to discuss department gossip in the backyard. "You know, I might take a break from the degree," Peter said, looking towards the nearby canal swirling around melting ice in his gimlet. In a slight stupor of heat and gin, Clive attempted comment, but Mayor McCheese arrived and the conversation came alive, turning to talk of adverts, franchises, and the mayor's friendship with Steve McQueen. Despite the excitement at the Foreigner, Peter kept turning the conversation back to Clive, finally asking for a walk. "All right then, sport," Clive told Peter. "Off we go." As they walked down to the canal, Peter glanced back at the American and Jenny. Mayor McCheese seemed to be telling a funny story, his gloved hands and tiny top hat wavering in the air. "Clive, I'm going to do it." "Do what?" Clive replied, still looking at Jenny. "Leave school?" "Ask Jenny to marry me. I'm afraid what I've said before about leaving school was a bit of a ruse. But what do you think? She and I have been living together rather well." "Well?" "I'm asking what you think. I think a break from school is a healthy thing for someone like you." Hand in hand, Jenny and Mayor McCheese ran towards the men. "Peter," Jenny blurted out, "our mayor has the most delightful story about Liza Minnelli. You simply must hear it." And you have been hogging our lecture of restoration comedy. Jenny took Clive's elbow crook and walked him away from Mayor McCheese and Peter. Clive looked down and caught a glimpse of a light blue bra strap escaping from under her blouse. She pulled it back and said, "He's a laugh, innit? Peter?" "No," she shouted, while tapping Clive on the chest, she coyly lowered her voice. "Mayor McCheese." "There is already a Mrs. McCheese." "Really?" Jenny faked badly. "Do you know the mayor said I'd be perfect for an advert when they're filming in a few weeks?" "How would I know what he asked you? He only just told you." "Always the headmaster, eh? It's just for a laugh, Clive, and Pinter's directing." "Then do it." Peter and Mayor McCheese merged back with Clive and Jenny along the canal. "Oi," Peter cried out, "let's play Yahtzee." Clive drove to the studio at the end of the day of the advert shoot and waited in the parking lot. Jenny didn't show. After half an hour, he looked at his watch. Clive got out, slammed the door, then skulked into the studio where the stage was already shutting down. There were foam trees, a smiling felt sun, and a field of baby hamburger puppets being gathered off the fake farm set. So this is McDonald Land, he thought. Clive found a technician coiling wire and asked if Jenny was still around. A different man, pushing a camera out of the way, shouted, "Try the office upstairs. She's getting her next job done, she is." Several old workers exploded with toothless giggles. Embarrassed, Clive left and sat in the car. Jenny dashed out some time later. She hopped in. "Thanks for the lift back," she said, pecking Clive's cheek. He caught a whiff of pickle and winced. "Do you get overtime?" "Are you jealous, Clive? How adorable. Mayor McCheese loves to talk, and that's all. You know these Americans." Clive drove out to the city. Dusk turned into night before he asked her, "How long have you been seeing him?" "Since we met." "That night, Clive shouted out, at my house, with Peter there?" "I don't believe you. You don't like Peter any more than I do. Mayor McCheese is different. I want different." "You've got cheese in your hair." "Don't judge me like that, Clive, not you." "He's really Scottish then, is he?" Clive deadpanned. They both laughed. 2 blocks from her and Peter's flat, Clive pulled the car over near a street lamp. "We're going to the city over the next few weekends, Candace and I," he mumbled, not looking at Jenny. "Her sister is pregnant again. You remember where the key is, right?" "You know, he says he knows a lot of people at Yardo." Clive shut the door on the constable. While he appeared satisfied with Clive's answers, the constable seemed to be stretching his gaze past him. Clive now looked around his own home suspiciously. How quickly it became a mess in the 15 hours without Candace. He had feigned a fever and stayed back for the weekend. Candace obliged his performance, even refusing his unshaven peck at the door as she and the children left. He waited for Jenny and their American friend, drinking wine throughout the warm country day. By 8 p.m., he was too drunk to get up off the divan and ended up urinating into an empty wine bottle. Jenny and Mayor McCheese never arrived. Somehow, Clive ambled to bed, set the full wine bottle on the nightstand, and passed out. "You were driving the car, weren't you?" Clive asked as he ran back into the bedroom where Jenny now lay sobbing. "No!" Clive threw himself onto Jenny, pinned her arms down, and held his face close to hers. "Tell the fucking truth. You were driving, weren't you?" "No," Jenny shouted, wriggling under his weight. Clive backed off and sat at the edge of his bed. "Yes," Jenny shrieked, rolling over the pillow. "Yes, I bloody fucking well was driving." He stood up and went to the window. Down the way, an old lorry's lights were flashing, ready to take the ruined car and dead men away. This was still the countryside, and uncomfortable questions were often left respectably unanswered, even for an American with a hamburger patty for a noggin. "Fond of him?" Clive asked, still looking out the window. "You?" Jenny spat back. Clive held his hand flat against the window, leaving marks. He took his hand away, thinking Candace would have to clean up after him. Clive had followed Jenny and Mayor McCheese to Soho one morning, staying several automobiles behind the blue Peugeot, feeling much more like Michael Caine than a lecturer on restoration comedy. Jenny and the American parked in an impossibly narrow cobblestone alley and darted around the corner. Clive waited several breaths and followed them to the door under a burned-out marquee declaring Continental Cinema Arts. Entering into a lobby staffed by a lone geezer, Clive paid the £1 admission to Belgian Spa, now in its third hit week according to a sign etched in blue biro. The cinema sat 50 at most, with only several punters spread around. Clive perched at the back and saw Mayor McCheese's oblong head silhouetted by scratched, sputtering, fresh blurs on the screen. It was then that the mayor's head struck Clive as a spaceship of some kind. Jenny, beside the mayor, rubbed closer to the spaceship, her arm and shoulder slowly falling up and down. A hand job, as the Yanks called it. Clive had heard his students talk about them, and often thought it sounded like a service to be checked off on a contractor's estimate. As the film and Jenny's arm continued their cyclical movements, Clive noticed the punters, seemingly out of feral instinct, start to move closer to the couple, seat by seat. Clive got up, hopping one aisle, then another. He wanted to warn Jenny about the perverts, about where she was. Clive felt the projection light catch his face. He sat down quickly, slunking into his new seat. Clive beat all the other punters and was alone at the end of Jenny and Mayor McCheese's aisle, looking at them, looking at the screen, looking at Jenny's hand, and then looking at his own.